Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
And so I feel like it's only fitting that we bring our first guest into this conversation as well via the fan hotline. He is John Sable, Fox 8 News. And I'm going to be seeing a lot more John here coming up with training camp on the horizon. John, I know I'm looking forward to that, but how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks for having me on. I am looking forward to camp and, you know, having you grace your presence as well as everyone else in the Cleveland media for what should be an exciting and probably disappointing Brown season.
When you put it like that, it makes it feel like it's just not, you know, like where all the excitement gets sucked out of the building. I was going to ask, John, did you get a chance to go anywhere? Did you take any trips the last couple weeks?
You know, I did. Over the July 4th holiday weekend, my in-laws have a cottage up in northern Michigan.
Nice.
So we go up there every year. So we were there for about a week and get away from everything and kind of get away from civilization and get back in the saddle now just in time for training camp to begin. But yeah, it was a good time.
Do you have the same feeling I do when you, because I was on vacation the same sort of time as you were, like 4th of July weekend, where like once the vacation's over, because the business we work in, we know that our summer's basically over at that point. Like there's nothing else really to look, because we know training camp's just about to start like in a week.
Yeah, I mean, that's how, kind of how it's always been for me. I mean, I feel the same way. Whenever I try to always kind of schedule a big family vacation early to mid-July before, you know, training camps would start when I worked down in Tampa before moving back up to Cleveland when I'd cover the Buccaneers, it was the same deal. You know, you always knew once that third, fourth week of July was creeping, it was kind of like school was back in session. So you knew that your summer break was over.
Yeah. Yeah. You kind of get slapped with the reality of that when you're driving home, which I certainly felt on coming home from our trip. So John, I started the show. I fired a lot of people up because I was basically gushing about how, listen, I don't know if Shador Sanders on the field is going to for sure be the Browns franchise quarterback. I think there's potentially could be because I liked him in the pre-draft process. I see things in his game that I think really work with Kevin Stefanski's offense. I think he has the talent to be a good quarterback in the NFL if he, you know, gets the opportunity, but we have to see it play out. But I do think off the field, and since he's gotten here to Cleveland, other than the speeding tickets that we've obviously, that was an exhaustive topic a couple weeks ago, I see a guy who's done everything the right way. And I think like his appearance at the community events this week and doing the fun little drive through at a KFC today, I don't know. To me, it feels like this is a guy who, when you're trying to like mold your franchise quarterback, he has the other boxes checked. He's confident. He is personable. He's trying to be integrated in the community. And frankly, John, like while other players, while we were on vacation, while other players are on vacation, he was here in Northeast Ohio, basically just going high school to high school, getting workouts in. Do you feel like Shador Sanders, like, do you admire that Shador Sanders is sort of walking the walk of a franchise quarterback, even though we don't have the full picture of if he's going to be that guy or not?
Yeah, I think we saw it firsthand a couple of days right after the draft. I mean, he was going to two different high schools right after the draft because that was before rookie minicamp. I mean, that was like days after he was already here in Cleveland, working out privately, not in the facility, but on his own and going to schools. And, you know, you talk to his people and you talk to him, this is who he is. I think we all saw the draft fall with some pre-draft concerns by some teams, and some of it might have been, you know, valid and some of it might have been inaccurate. I can tell you this. I know somebody that knows the Sanders family really well within the NFL, a prominent NFL agent, And he told me before the draft that he expected him to fall. And I think I told you this at the facility on draft night. I mean, he thought he was going to fall, and boy, he nailed it. But also he said the Shador that you see in the public eye on the social media isn't or in the community. That's who he is. But you're going to see a different Shador when he's out of his father's shadow. And I said, what do you mean? He's like, he's going to be moving away from Deion would be the best thing for him because he's finally away from home. I mean, Deion was his coach growing up, Jackson State, Colorado, and now he kind of spread his own wings. And everyone kind of looked at this as, well, let's see what he's going to do away. So far, so good. This is who he is. I mean, this is a kid who's maybe needs to mature in some aspects, but who doesn't when they're that young?
Yeah.
But he's doing everything right. We can all joke about the speeding tickets and, you know, that's nothing compared to in the grand scheme of things, you know?
Yeah.
By the way, that was my dog, Myla, barking, if you could hear her.
He's got some great takes, or she has some great takes. Sorry, yeah.
She does, yeah. but, you know, I think I heard your point, Spencer, before about Baker when he first got here. And he maybe not have got that right away. But he has it now. He's a much different quarterback now than when he was in Cleveland versus what he's doing in Tampa now. Sometimes it takes kids and everyone different speeds and times to mature off the field and different things. You know, when you see Shador out in the community like this, he's saying all the right things. I mean, it's a great PR move, but it legitimately looks genuine and it sounds genuine. And everybody that I know that I've talked with in Boulder through the pre-draft process and then after, this is who he is. Let's see if it translates. Let's see if he can grasp the hold of the NFL now, the NFL life on the field. And when will he get that opportunity? That's the big question. And when that happens, we'll see.
Talking with John Sable, Fox 8 here in Cleveland. John, we'll stick with the quarterbacks here for a second. With training camp less than a week away now, we know rookies report tomorrow. We might be missing one of those guys, which we'll get to coming up. But what is your, like, put it in stone here, your final pre-training camp depth chart for the quarterbacks? What does this look like as training camp is about to begin?
I think when things open up on Wednesday next week and we see the practice and we kind of throw the microscope in, everyone's going to start charting silly, stupid incompletions and reps and all that. I mean, it's going to look the same, I think, as it did the last few days of mandatory minicamp. I think what you want to look at is after practice day 5. That's the big thing for me. When you put the pads on, that's when the real evaluation begins. I think you're going to see Joe Flacco take reps number 1, Kenny Pickett 2, and then probably Dylan Gabriel 3 and Shador 4 right out the gate. Just kind of the way they were drafted and the fact that Shador never took a single rep of the first team offense kind of leads you into my rationale and everyone else's rationale as to where he'll be when things start. That's not where he's going to finish. I still fully expect Joe Flacco to win that job and be your quarterback QB1 in week 1.
Along those lines, in talking about it's Shador, but it's also Dylan Gabriel as part of this question too. Do you think those guys are going to get a legitimately like fair shake at winning the starting job? Because, John, like, I just get the sense that it's more so set up like two different quarterback competitions. Like, it's Joe Flacco and Kenny Pickett for the starting job, and it's Dylan Gabriel and Shador Sanders for the primary backup spot. And I like, if the team wants to, they can sort of handle the reps in a way that give you a taste of the rookies, but allows them to have the out of, well, we just didn't see enough of those guys. There was only so many reps to go around, so we need to give them more time, because I think, frankly, that's what they want to do. I don't think they want these rookies starting week 1. And so if that's kind of the mentality they have going in, do you really think that Shador Sanders and Dylan Gabriel are going to get like a fair chance to actually win the starting job during training camp?
Well, I think fair is kind of a relative term. I mean, if you really think of where they were taken. I mean, Dylan Gabriel was drafted much earlier than Shador. Yeah. Shador being a fifth round pick. Some people, I think, are kind of a little delusional thinking a fifth round pick is going to be a week 1 starter and leapfrog 3 other guys. I just don't see that as even a realm of possibility, barring injuries. I think that's the caveat here. I don't know if it's going to be necessarily a fair shake. I don't think it will be, just because of the veteran aspect of things of Joe Flacco and Kenny Pickett. But here's the beauty, Spencer, and this is the one thing people and Browns fans need to realize, is they don't need to have a fair shake, in my opinion, right out the gate. Because guess what? This is a long season. And if the last few years have proved us or showed us anything, it's proved that this multiple quarterbacks will play. There's a real good chance all four of those quarterbacks will play at least one regular season game this year. So there's still a lot more that they need to learn, and especially Dylan and Shador, in terms of the playbook and in terms of the scheme and the system. So I think it's mostly by, you know, common sense would dictate and show you that they're not ready. And Joe Flacco obviously is the most ready of them of all four of them. So they may not play week one. That doesn't mean they're not going to play at all. But you need to see them at some point during their season, because you drafted them for a reason, and you spent a lot of time on Dylan Gabriel taking him that early, which a lot of people, including yours truly, and I know you felt the same way, the night of draft night, reached on him a little bit there instead of taking a different position there. But let's see what he can show. He had kind of an up and – Dylan Gabriel, in my opinion, had a little up and down camp, mandatory mini camp and rookie camp and OTAs there. I think he showed some signs of growth, which was great. And Shador, you know, had really good days as well. Kenny Pickett had some decent days, may not nothing to blow you away on. But, I mean, this is – we went through the whole off-season spring stuff, and we all dissected it as best we can. But I think you're going to see something change here with in the training camp once the playbook opens up and you get everyone in there, and then when you put the pads on too. So if I had to guess, all four of those guys will play at least one game this season. They almost have to, because you got two first-round picks next year, and everyone assumes they're going to take a quarterback, and I think they will. Who that will be, who knows.
A few more minutes to John Sable, Fox 8. I want to get to the Quinshon Judkins thing because, listen, we obviously have to let the legal process play out. I'm sure we're going to get a lot of that from Kevin Stefanski next week when he's asked about it. And so we don't know yet like what repercussions they're going to be from both a legal standpoint and NFL standpoint. But I am kind of anticipating that there's a likely suspension here. It's also complicated by him not having signed his contract yet, which it sounds like now all these second-round picks are starting to get those deals done after the first domino sort of fell today. But how much, if Quinshon is suspended, how much does that change the outlook for the Browns in this season, and specifically on offense? Because we know how important this run game is going to be, and getting back to the basics of Kevin Stefanski's offense is going to be to the success, or however much success, this team is going to have.
Yeah, it's just really unfortunate what happened, and we'll let the legal process, you know, evolve and figure out where things go. I'm with you. I expect a suspension will come down. I mean, look at the Mike Hall situation last year.
He
was suspended for five games for violating the NFL league's personal conduct policy, and I would, as it sits now, I would expect something similar to that for Judkins. But we don't know all. We don't know everything. We don't know all the entire case, and the NFL is going to evaluate their way too. In terms of how it hurts the Browns on the field, well, the Browns were expecting him, Quinshon, to be that three down back, the guy that can run between the tackles. He's going to be was supposed to be your Nick Chubb, you know, type of player. And they were really high on him, and we saw what he had, some explosiveness in the limited times we saw him during the spring practices. You know, and we saw him at Ohio State and what he was able to do. And now the onus is going to be pushed on Jerome Ford and Dylan Sampson, at least in the short term here, and seeing what those guys, especially the rookie Sampson, can do. I don't know how much it's going to impact. It's going to impact the run game quite a bit. The workload of Ford for sure is going to increase. And then it kind of, you got to think Sampson's going to be right there with him, because he almost has to be. It's just really what's frustrating, I think, for Browns fans is what's happened last year, and then another draft pick in trouble with the law. And you can – fans want to rip Andrew Berry all they want. And I don't know necessarily if that's fair in this case, because, Spencer, you know as well as I do, we've checked and talked to people in Columbus. I mean, Quinshon Judkins had no red flags in the pre-draft process.
Right.
I mean, there was nothing. Everyone raved about him. And this is what kind of shocked everybody. I know there are some things that popped up with Mike Hall in the past that wasn't really relevant, or wasn't really obvious during the draft last year, kind of afterwards when that whole thing happened with him. It's just really frustrating. It's just another aspect of the Browns season that you think, okay, now we got to work our way back up here. We got to, you know, mentally prepare, and everything's against us now. A lot of people are counting the Browns out, and I think it's going to be and that's not a rebuilding year, but it's going to be a developmental year. I think they probably, you know, even besides this, eventual suspension, I think the Browns were probably, I had them winning like 5 or 6 games this year. Some people have them higher, some people have them a lot lower, but it's just another chapter in the Browns fans' book of misery. And, you know, it is what it is. And we hope the legal process and everything gets ironed out. And we're curious to see what Kevin Stefanski has to say about this, because, you know, they're probably going to say the same thing. Well, we're going to let the legal process evolve and see where that goes. But I think the key here is look at that running game and who's going to be taking that running back 2 reps. And I think it's going to probably be Dylan Sampson, because Jerome Ford is going to be that bell cow back again. And I'm not sure the Browns probably wanted to have that right away coming out of the gate in training camp.
I have a follow-up I'm going to ask you in person next week to the Andrew Berry part of this. But we are short on time, so I'm going to ask you something different here to get us out of here with like a minute to go. The slot wide receiver spot. Not a lot of experience in the wide receiver room. We don't know how they're going to handle that yet. I guess it could be Deontay Johnson, but he's been more of an outside guy during his career. How do you think the Browns are going to fill that role? Is it going to be more Harold Fannin? Is it going to be a Jamari Thrash? How do you see them sort of filling that void?
They're really banking, I think, Cedric Tillman to take that next step. And he almost has to take that step, because they used a high tech on him the other 2 years ago. Concussion knocked him out for most of the last season. They were really high on him. They still are here. You know, this is a young man who's got a lot of potential, good pedigree, dad, former NFL player. He's got all the tools. We just need to see it now consistently and stay healthy. And a lot of that stuff's out of the kid's control. I still think it's probably one of the weaker positions by far. I don't necessarily rule them out of acquiring a veteran at some point, maybe after the cuts in training camp and the preseason. We'll see. But Harold Fannin will definitely be used, as well as Njoku. But I think the one guy to really look at, I think, is Cedric Tillman first, and then probably Jamari Thrash, because Tillman's got a lot to prove. And he's got pretty much, on paper, he's got that number 2 wideout spot right there for him. Beyond that, though, I mean, they are thin there.
Yeah.
And this is a position in the past that the organization really hasn't been that high on and building depth in, kind of like how they have been this in linebacker, in my opinion. So, but they're expecting Tillman to be what he was coming out of Tennessee. And now let's just hopefully he can stay healthy and he can finally show everyone, because he's a good kid. And, you know, definitely a guy you want to root for.
John Sable, Fox 8 News. I wish we had more time with you, because I think you always bring some great insight. But I know we'll talk next week and share some more of our takes on things. But I'll let you go, my man. Thank you so much for giving us some time tonight, John.
Absolutely, man. I'll see you out there in Berea. And it should be a fun time going forward here the next 6 weeks before we get the season rolling, man.
Have a good final weekend of summer.
Hey, appreciate it, buddy. Take care. Talk to you.
See you, John. Good stuff from John Sable, Fox 8. We'll react to what he had to say in about 5 minutes about Shador, about the Quinshon Judkins thing, and much, much more. It's Spencer German with you, filling in for Jake Vonick here on The Fan. This is where I am. So listen, John is right. And I said this off rip when this all came down. It's hard to blame Andrew Berry for drafting Quinshon Judkins when you get like rave reviews about a guy, there's no red flags, there's no concerns or anything like that. I don't know that I can sit here and like bash him and be like, well, what a moron for drafting this guy. Now, Jax had some inside information about Quinshon Judkins that we could have been a red flag, but we'll save that for another time. But no, like, I don't blame Andrew Berry for drafting Quinshon Judkins for, on the surface of it, like, there was no reason to believe that something like this.
At Marisa's, we're all about great jeans. You know, the ones that fit you just right. The ones that go from work days to weekends and everywhere in between. The ones that simply make you feel good. Because you don't just wear jeans, you live in them. With 25 sizes, 5 lengths, and 6 denim brands, you've got options. And fit experts in every store to make jean shopping easier. Find great jeans starting at $29.90 in stores and at Marisa's.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
This was going to happen with Quinshon Judkins. Sometimes these things happen with players. But what I will say is that where I do wonder if Andrew Berry deserves at least a little bit of blame is if the Browns at this point have established that they aren't afraid to take players who do have those red flags. And they've done that in the past. Mike Hall had some questions. There were some things there. We know, like, obviously, Deshaun is the biggest one of all. Like, they have established at this point that they're not afraid to take those guys. They will try. They will bank on the talent being the most important thing. They will bank on sort of these players reinventing themselves, if you will, and getting them on the right track. They're not afraid to do it. And listen, I understand. You're running a football team. You're not building a Boy Scout troop. So I'm not expecting everybody on a football team to be Saints, no pun intended, because there is literally a team of New Orleans Saints, but you get what I'm saying. I'm not expecting all these guys to be choir boys. I get that. But where I wonder if there's some blame to go around for Andrew Berry and the brass in general is just in the culture that they have built, where, listen, there are no repercussions other than whatever the league hands down for you doing these things, at least that we know of. I don't know if internally there's some, maybe there's a fine system. I have no idea. I mean, this is likely going to cost Quinshon Judkins, if he wanted his fully guaranteed contract, now that these second round draft picks are all signing today, this incident likely cost Quinshon some of that guaranteed money that he was hoping for. But maybe that's the recourse here. It's like, well, hey, you cost yourself money. But like, for when an organization gives out a fully guaranteed contract worth $230 million to one of the biggest problem children of in NFL history in Deshaun Watson and everything that he brought to the table, and he gets rewarded for it on the back end by getting traded for, fully guaranteed contract, all those things, you're not exactly setting this culture or precedent that, like, we don't tolerate certain things. You basically open up the door to, we'll accept anybody with any problems when that's the move that you make. And so I think the same thing sort of applies here with Quinshon. It's like, I'm not saying they should cut him, but if they had had in the past had put their foot down on certain players and said, like, yeah, we're not going to stand for this. I mean, it took several incidents for them to decide, hey, time to move on from Perrion Winfrey. It became too much. But Perrion got it. He had a couple strikes. It's the acceptance of everything and everybody that becomes the biggest problem, because now nobody even hesitates. Like, I'm not saying that in the moment of this incident that happened with Quinshon Judkins that he'd have this something would come over him that would stop him from doing what he did because, hey, you know what? If I do this, I could get cut, but it doesn't hurt to have that as like a thing in the back of somebody's mind that it might actually cost them an opportunity in the NFL if you go and do this thing. That just doesn't exist with this Browns team. And so because of that, because of the culture that's been established under Andrew Berry and frankly Kevin Stefanski, I just wonder if that's where the blame sort of falls in Andrew Berry's lap. Not because he took the player who didn't have any red flags during the pre-draft process and that nobody saw this coming, but because It feels like the Browns are accepting of anything, anybody, any problems, that now there's no hesitation and nobody has any sort of worry about what it means for their career because they know they're going to get umpteenth chances to prove themselves. And there's no better example of that than Deshaun Watson with what he was brought here, given everything that had gone on off the field with him. That's where I wonder if there's some blame to go around for Andrew Berry. And it's interesting. Like, I know the Morning Boys talked about Andrew Berry's approval rating might be lower than it's ever been right now after the Quinshon Judkins incident. But what's funny about that is, like, even as recently as like a week ago, I was arguing that there's a really good opportunity here for Andrew Berry to start repairing his image and his reputation in this town among fans. If, you know, 3 to 4 of the guys in this draft class hit, and if one of these quarterbacks pans out to be the guy or is at least a suitable guy for a while for this team, like, all bets are off. Like, he could fix his image in one fell swoop. So that's what I find interesting about this whole situation. It's like, I don't blame Andrew Berry for the pick. I loved Quinshon Judkins coming out in the pre-draft process, and there was nothing bad said about him. But where I wonder if there's reason for blame that falls in Andrew Berry's desk is, well, you've now established this culture that anything's acceptable. And maybe that's where he's done some things wrong with the way that he's gone about bringing these players in. And now this latest incident, maybe it would have changed the way things went if players felt there was more recourse for their actions here in Cleveland. 216-474-0092.
At Maurice's, we're all about great jeans. You know, the ones that fit you just right. The ones that go from work days to weekends and everywhere in between. The ones that simply make you feel good. Because you don't just wear jeans, you live in them. With 25 sizes, 5 lengths, and 6 denim brands, you've got options. And fit experts in every store to make jean shopping easier. Find great jeans starting at $29.90 in stores and at Maurice's.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Doing nothing is more despicable, doing nothing is the most despicable move that the Guardians can actually try to pull at the trade deadline. I'll get to that here coming up in about 6 minutes, plus your calls. But I will not stand here and be accused of just like being a pawn in some PR machine, which is why I pushed back on our first caller of the night. If you want to go back and hear that call, second segment, 7:20, check it out. It was fun. I got very riled up. So did the caller. Caller accused the person that went to the drive-thru and asked Shador or made comments about Joe Flacco to Shador Sanders as a paid plant, essentially. Anyway, as the trade deadline approaches, so here's the thing. I think the Guardians actually have a decent chance of clawing themselves back in the wild card race and being part of this playoff conversation. Once the season picks back up, obviously starting tomorrow night with the A's in town. And part of the reason I think that is because of what their remaining schedule kind of looks like, starting with the A's coming to town on Friday night. You have the A's, you have the Orioles, you have the Royals, all three back-to-back. And then a fourth series in a row, you get the Rockies at home to round out July, which will bring you to the trade deadline. And so at that point, the Guardians could come out of this break and just be on fire. roll through that stretch of the schedule, be right back in the wild card conversation, and then boom, trade deadline's here. What are you going to do? As you then get ready for the Twins after that and another series with the White Sox and a bad Marlins team. Like, their strength of schedule is favors the Guardians pretty much the rest of the way. They have one more series with the they have two more series with the Tigers. They still have to play a Rays team that is obviously a good wild card team right now. They have to play the Braves still. I think the Braves are having a bad year though too. So I'm not so sure that they're a tough opponent. But like, the strength of schedule, the Guardians have one of the easiest strength of schedules the rest of the way. And so I do think there's an opportunity to get back in this race here. But like I said, these first three series back, or these first four series back, ending with Colorado at the end of the month, puts you at the trade deadline with an opportunity where it's like, man, you could be right back in the thick of this thing with a chance to make a run. Shane Bieber coming back here at some point. A lot of reason for optimism. But we know the truth about this team, and we saw a lot of it exposed during that 10-game losing streak. This offense just isn't good enough. And so as we toss around trade ideas, I know Nick and I talked ad nauseum about like Kwan and Class A and packaging them together for a deal with the Dodgers and what it would have to look like and who you want back. And he was mad about LA, ESPN LA's proposal and all these different things. Well, today, on our very station, Paul Hoynes joined, I believe, Baskin and Phelps. And he jumped in on the trade speculation, of course, that is out there. And what all that could sort of look like. And whether or not he's buying that the Guardians are going to trade one of these players that's been floated, most notably Emmanuel Clase. Here's what he had to say.
From what I've heard lately from outside the organization and from a couple of contenders, they have said that when they've talked about Class A, the Guardians have said no. They do not want to trade him. And the same goes for Cade Smith. But that was a week ago. That was, the deadline hasn't kind of created pressure yet. So we'll see what happens. But I think Class A obviously is the number one on a lot of teams' lists. And it would not stun me if he got traded. But right now I'm leaning toward he doesn't get moved.
So listen, Hoynesy is right in that there's still a lot that can happen in these next couple weeks before the Guardians have to make a decision on anything, buy, sell, stand pat, whatever. And so, and Class A ultimately is still very controllable. He's got this year on arbitration, next year on arbitration, then two club options after that for $10 million. Like, they feel pretty good. When you have guys that are under control with you for that long, there's still a window here to keep them around and maximize their potential. Granted, you're going to get more of a haul for Class A now than you might when he's, say, 29, because by then maybe he's not the same pitcher, right? Like, these pitchers are so volatile, especially bullpen guys and closers, that you just never know. But as I heard Hoynesy say that, and he kind of gives credence to the idea that, like, the Guardians probably aren't going to trade Class A, it just brought fear to my heart to think that the ultimate move that the Guardians could make at the deadline might just be nothing. It might just be nothing. And that would be the most egregious thing that they could pull on this fan base right now. Because doing nothing essentially says, hey, we think we're pretty damn good and we don't need to change anything. Or we like where we're at. And I don't know how this team could possibly sit there. Even if they go through and they breeze through most of this next stretch of the schedule and they're right back in the thick of the wild card race, I don't know how they can sit there and be like, you know what? We feel good about where we're at. There's not a chance in hell that that can be the mindset from this team come the end of July here in just about 2 weeks. That would be asinine to feel that way, because the fact of the matter is, sure, they got hot right before the All-Star break. Great. We all know what this offense is. It's carried by Jose Ramirez. On some level, Stephen Kwan is an important piece because he gets on base at times and you can drive him in. But the rest of it is hot garbage. Carlos Santana does some things. Nolan Jones was doing some things for a while. We're waiting for Chase DeLauder. Like, there's still so many questions in this lineup. And to act like it's just going to be all okay because you might win a few series against some of the worst teams in baseball would be unwise. And ridiculous. if that's the move, if that's the decision, if we get to July 31st and this team just decides, you know what, we're going to do nothing, I think fans in this town should be more angry than if they were to trade, say, like Stephen Kwan. And I mean that. I 100% mean that. Because at least if they trade Stephen Kwan, you know they're not going to get fleeced. This team does not generally get fleeced in trades. It happens, yes, there are examples, but they don't generally get fleeced in trades. They're going to get back a haul if they move somebody like Klasse, if they move somebody like Stephen Kwan. If they move either of those guys and they get back a haul, at least it would be them being like, you know what, we understand we're not going to compete this year. Let's go get some prospects. Let's bring back maybe somebody who's ready to play now, maybe a bat, and we start sort of, we see what they give us the rest of the year as we're in this wild card race, and then next year we got this great new lineup that we feel good about, whatever. Like, at least they could sell you on something. If you stand pat, it's just an acceptance of like, yeah, we're kind of just here, and we're okay with that. And it's that exact mentality, that exact mindset that sparks conversations like the morning show had today about being just indifferent towards the team in general and that they don't seem to care about winning. Not doing anything speaks to just not caring about winning. It's an acceptance that you're okay being mediocre for at least the rest of this season, but maybe even beyond, because you're not changing out any pieces of parts or parts on what is clearly a flawed team. So maybe they don't trade anybody. Maybe Klasse is still here August 1st. And I could understand why, because again, of the team control thing. All that makes sense to me. But man, if they really decide that their best path forward is don't do anything, that's absurd. And Paul Hoynes is kind of giving credence to that, because he's saying, I don't get the sense right now that they're going to trade Emmanuel Klasse. If they don't trade, like, Klasse is the one piece that makes the most sense to move, because you have Cade Smith there, you feel like he's your next closer. That one's an obvious one. If you're trying to get back like some haul that's going to be maybe helps you now, or prospects that are going to help you in the future, or pretty soon in the future, in the near future, that's maybe the guy you move. Kwan is more complicated because maybe they want to try to pay him, or at the very least, you see it through this year and into the offseason and see what he sort of brings to the table for you for trying to make a run. Because he is, and it's different when you're talking about like Klasse. This team has no shortage of, they've never been able to not develop pitchers. Like, that's their bread and butter, is developing pitchers. So you move on from Klasse, you feel like they'll find another, they have Cade Smith, but also they'll continue pumping out great pitching. And so you're not as upset about that. If you trade one of the guys who's a staple in this lineup, that is kind of a concession of, yeah, we're not good enough and we're going to just sort of pivot to next year. At least they'd be deciding something, but Kwan's a little more complicated, obviously, than Klasse. So if they're not going to trade Klasse, I don't know what they're going to do. Trade Carlos Santana? Because I will be first person, hand in the air, hand to God, ready to trade Carlos Santana, and I'll pick him up and drive him to the airport. I will Uber him to the airport. Not because I don't like him, not because I don't want him to be here, but because it just doesn't make any sense. The Guardians' biggest problem right now is that they're trying to live in the present and the future at the exact same time. And you can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't have Carlos Santana on this team and be like, hey, he helps us compete, but then be like, yeah, we also need to see if Kyle Manzardo is our first baseman of the future. Oh, and by the way, we have CJ Cephas down in AAA who's raking and has probably earned at least a chance to come up and see what he can do. And we have some options there. Carlos Santana is blocking other people from maybe their full potential or at least getting a look. And so I understand where he's a part of your offense that you feel like you need, but he also creates opportunities for other people. So I'd be okay moving on from him, but I feel like they're not going to do that because in the name of trying to win the rest of the way with an inconsistent bipolar lineup, they're probably going to want to keep him around because he's one of the only legitimate contributors to this team. And so I doubt he gets traded. And so if he doesn't get traded, and if Klasse doesn't get traded, does anybody get traded? And that's the problem. If they do nothing at the deadline and just kind of accept status quo and they're like, yeah, we're good being mediocre, I think that is the absolute most disingenuous move, or lack thereof, or decision rather, that this team could make in about 2 weeks here at the trade deadline. 216-474-0092. Do you agree? Do you disagree that the Guardians doing nothing, standing pat at the trade deadline would be the worst decision they can make? 9 o'clock hour begins in about six minutes here. And when it does, we'll have an overtime with Jake Volnick staple for you. Get a grip. And I am very excited about this one tonight. A lot of good segments from today. A lot of clips from around sports in general. We'll play them for you. We'll react to them coming up next. Get a grip here on Overtime with Jake Volnick. Spencer German filling in, though, on The Fan.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.